I am a new LDL, and this is my fourth Dharma talk. So just putting it out there. And I feel very grateful to be talking about these calming factors because they're so beautiful. And I think it's just simply amazing that calm comes from joy. And then when I was thinking about that, I have these memories of like a child, maybe age 7, blowing out candles on a birthday cake, and maybe like the first time, and how that joy of doing that turned into such a calm of being so content and at ease. And so the two words that I have for calm, I don't use the word tranquility. I use the word calm. And the two words I like are be still. And when we're still, calm arises. And this is my experience in that moment that I still remember. And the calm affects our body and our mind. And the Buddha had another description of someone who's lost in like the desert, and she sees an oasis, and joy floods her body and mind, and it's an uplifting experience. And then she goes and drinks the water, and she's happy and oh so fulfilled there, and then lies on the bank, content, calm. That's where he placed calm, was on the bank. There's no mental confusion. There's no agitation. There's nothing that needs to be added to the moment. I came up with this phrase that the nutriments we feed ourselves are sense restraint. And I said, the mouth of craving is shut. And the legs of aversion are still. The mind is content. And so we're not reaching out to that next moment. We all know what calm is, but my fascination with this is, are we willing to let our busyness go to experience calm? You know, calm for me didn't used to be enough. Quite frankly, I wanted excitement. I listened to my loud music. I did Shakespeare, thank you very much. I had to be involved in everything or else I didn't feel complete. I tried to find what Suze was pointing to, that the conditions external to my insides to fill me for satisfaction. But I think the big question is, you know, can we be still? Can we be still in the midst of, you know, our conditioned world that just wants us to buy this, do that, have that experience? But I want to present an image that kind came to mind, and that is, I feel the heart is tugging at us all the time to stop. How many times do we walk by something? We don't have enough time. We walk by a flower or something catches our eye. The only thing that I could come up with is that the heart is tugging and we just plow on by. You know, we've got to do something, got to meet somebody, don't have time. That's what I think we're up against. I think we're up against this pressure to move and be busy. So when can we simply be still, be rather than do? And when we are calm, we're good for others. I'm reflecting on this. When I'm being, I'm not in a rush. I'm there for people. So that's what I want you to think about for calm. And when we're calm, the refined aspects lead us to concentration. And I have an interesting two words I want to offer for that, and that is rock steady. The steadiness, the stability that comes from a mind that is gathered and attentive. The rock is the notion of that there's still movement within this concentration. When the mind is concentrated, it's naturally absorbed. I have an experience of making mosaics one day for people, and I remember the joy and the ease at which I was doing this, and I looked up at the clock and 4 hours had passed, and I thought it was like 15 minutes. So we don't have to be on the cushion to experience this gathered mind and this absorption of our attention. And, you know, relaxing is directly proportional to our ability to concentrate. And I love what Rodney Smith, the founding teacher of SIM, says about concentration. In Seattle, we need one magnification. We don't need 600 magnification of one thing to zero in on. We can experience, another example I have is walking along the dike where I live, and I was watching these trumpeter swans in the river. They'd come to bathe because they just spend a lot of time in muddy fields. They're there in the water, you know, trumpeting away. But the thing that I noticed was when they took off, they slapped the water. You could always hear slap, 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 slap. They're huge birds. And they slap the water. That's amazing to me. That's another ordinary way of how concentration can be present. Also, concentration, you may know, is a factor of the Eightfold Path. And so right view has to be present. We know impermanence. We know everything is arising and passing away, and that sense of non-self is there. So if you're on the cushion and you have a strong sense of concentration in your body, and you're feeling that bliss, and you're feeling so good because you're in that concentrated state. Well, if we're not aware that we're in that state, and if we're not investigating, it's kind of being zoned out. You're blissed out, and you're probably not in this, what I define as concentration in this way, because we need to be awake to what's going on. So we have ordinary experiences with being concentrated with something. And it doesn't just have to happen on retreat. While you're on the cushion, though, one great way to be concentrated and to gather our attention to be rock steady is to watch the arising and passing away of body sensations, pain, usually. I've done this with severe hip flexor pain and watched my pain change from sharp, grabbing, aching, jabbing to bliss all of a sudden. And it feels good. This concentration is a salve for our bodies too. It allows this loving kindness to arise. And when we're concentrated, we don't have the hindrances. They're at bay. And that is part of the reason why concentration leads to equanimity. Because we are growing in our refinement of being open to all experiences without a mind that is agitated. And also, what I find is interesting is that we're not talking about getting ease. Okay, just get calm, then you're good. No, we're pointing to the ease that we can feel in spite of chaos, the conditions of the world. So how do we abide in life as it is with calm and equanimity? So equanimity is kind of known as the crown jewel of the seven factors. And the two words that I chose were big view, because I see it as we have to have this perspective, this big view, almost zooming out, a spaciousness that is, I want to say divorced. Well, it is. It's divorced from abiding in our opinions, our judgments. This is the way things should be. We know, you know, when you're in equanimity or this big view, when we're not being rocked with these eight worldly winds, you've heard of them. When we're not seeking pleasure, avoiding pain, when we're not seeking fame and avoiding ill repute, when we're not seeking praise and blame. That used to be all what my life was about. At a particular job, I had to be involved in everything. I needed the praise. I needed the fame and the gain, because I thought I was just absolutely bad without it. Absolutely bad person, no good, all those judgments. So equanimity calls for us to have this balance. And when we are calm, concentrated, and this equanimity, this big view comes, there's a phrase, we cease fighting everyone and everything. That's a recovery term. We are out of the way. We stop running the show. We leave our mind alone. I like that phrase. I hear Rodney talk about that. And we see, I have an example. Okay, it's a high bar, right? Because we're used to satisfying ourselves with external conditions, going on vacation, then we're going to be happy. How many days does it take to actually get calm? Have you ever noticed, have you ever had a vacation where, God, you just couldn't get away from yourself? It was not fun. It's like, why? I thought, well, no, you go, apparently you go with you. You go with you. All right, so let me get back to my story. And I'll show you how high a bar this is. Well, I mean, you already know it is. But so I'm walking along the river and had a nice walk, trumpeter swans, eagles. And I go to this part of the river where the riverbank has access. And I see these tires that have been tossed along the riverbank. And a month ago, somebody had dumped all these bags of concrete. So what did I do? I got angry. Immediately angry and triggered and going into fixing. I needed to make a phone call and tell people this is happening. They needed to fix the gate, put up the signs. There used to be signs there along the dike that say no trespassing, do not enter. I was ready to get all that in motion. I thought of an education campaign, because some people must not know or have access to dumping these difficult items. So it took me a day to come back to, why was that happening? Why was I so reactive? Well, it was because, and this is a really a beautiful thing, but it's also me, myself and mine. Didn't they see how sacred it is? Don't they know how beautiful that is? My river, my view. That's what I was hanging on to. That's why I was so upset. And in my view and my reactivity caused others to be reactive. So when I'm not stuck in reactivity, and when I have this distance that big view provides, I'm much more able to do what the Buddha points to at the very end of this Satipatthana Sutta, and that is dwell independently without clinging to anything in the world. It's not saying no pain. We have pain, yes, but it's the suffering, that second arrow. Can we abide? Well, what is left, you may ask? And I love this notion, not a notion, but this experience of what is left then? Can we abide in the pure experience as life? And this is moving into that. The what is left is the felt experience of life. When the self is thinned, we don't have judgments and opinions We're not reaching for external circumstances to fill us up. So can we move through life with as an experience? How much are you going to give up? You. What is it going to take? Is it possible? I love you. We are already on the path of awakening. You're on it. We're on it. And I love how someone said that this is what we're talking about with the seven factors, their health factors. It's the Dharma health program, but you know what I mean. And as Suze was pointing out, there are seven friends that we take to walk along the path. And that is good news. And I'm out of time. So thank you very much for listening. So we want to, we're going to pose an exiting full screen. We would like to pose some questions for you. And Suze, can you make me host so I can break people out?
I'm going to break them into groups.
Oh, that's right. And I'm going to tell
you. But according to our schedule, we were going to each talk for a couple minutes just about how to practice with this.
Okay, I forgot.
That's okay. Hey, folks, this is the world of Zoom where we do some of our work in front of everybody. We actually both shared some of the practice ideas during our talk, but we just, before we break into groups, we wanted to just highlight how to practice with these seven factors. And I wanted to start by asking people again, why do you practice? Why do you keep coming back? And to remember what you've been getting from the practice, how it has affected your life, how does it has affected your mind and heart and body, what it has meant to you. Because it's that kind of attitude and energy that brings us to really exploring in this very powerful way, without judgment, but with a lot of curiosity. So the first thing that I wanted to say was, remember why you practice, why you keep coming back to the cushion or to the chair. The second is to ask lots of questions. Now, it might not necessarily be while you're on the cushion, but afterwards, you know, you think, oh, what really came up over and over again was this thought pattern or this view, and really spend some time investigating what that's all about and asking as honestly as you can whether it's true, what these thoughts are and the stories that have come up. And then the third thing is really to remember that awakening, at least for me, and you'll have to come up with your own definition of it, but I love what Joseph Goldstein says about small moments many times, and that they're cumulative, and that those moments, just like last Sunday when Tiweri was talking about the transcendental dependent origination, and she was saying that you know, they're cumulative, and they happen, and then they happen again, and then they build up a kind of reservoir of joy and confidence and perspective, that wise, big, wide view that Susan was talking about. So many small moments, many times, no judgment. Why do you practice? And then Susan, whatever you wanted to add.
Okay, thank you, Suze. I had like a list of 10 things after each one. Now there are three, but I'm looking at my original list. So I'll be brief though. So for calm, you know, recognize when you are calm. That might sound silly, but this is what the Buddha is pointing to when we're talking about these factors. We need to be able to recognize them when they're present and know when they're not. Mm-hmm. So when you're agitated or upset, can you pause with mindfulness? Can you just pause and note, okay, agitation, and then just take a breath? Can you put down what you're caught up in? And I love Rodney's question. He often asks, where is blank in this moment? So ask, where is calm in this moment? Even by asking the question, you're inviting your heart, mind to look, even if it's not. So cultivate what brings you ease. What brings you ease? For me, I love reading children's stories. I love walking in nature. I love watching children's movies, actually. Sending yourself metta and others metta brings calm, loving kindness. Wish people well. I love this one. Notice calm in others. That's really powerful. Also powerful is listening more and talking less. Gosh, can we risk not being seen and heard? What would that be like? Do we disappear in the room if we're not talking and engaging? So for concentration, I love the idea. It's similarly about what could you focus on? Like I brought up mosaics. Is there something that you can do that is, maybe it's writing, that kind of brings you, so your mind is gathered and that you lose the sense of needing anything else. You can move your body slowly, like with Qigong, Tai Chi, working in the garden. What brings, arouses concentration in you? I had a great experience I wanted to share about eating. Have you ever ate a meal so mindfully that you paid attention to just the sensations of the food in your mouth, watched it, closing your eyes, move from chunky to watery to mushy? It's a fascinating experience. And then equanimity, big view. Notice when you're on automatic pilot, when you reverse wanting something. Also notice when your mind is stable and your body is stable and you feel confident, clear. You know that balance. You know it. So notice when you're not diving into a conversation. You're listening to somebody go on and on about, you know, complaining about this or that, very high, perhaps, energy. And you're like, wow, I'm not reacting, or I'm not even having to go into the conversation. I can just be a witness, embodied witness to this person. Because you know what? Maybe they don't even want to hear from you. Oftentimes, people just want to talk, you know, and they do want a listener. So those were my brief practice suggestions.